Christian Macellaru, thank you so much for joining us. This is not your first time with the Why So Rodeo, is it?
It's certainly not my first time. I've been here before as a conductor, but I was also here before as a student a few years ago, I would say. And back that summer in 1998, I played in Why So for all of the 8 weeks.
Really? Who were your conductors for those weeks? Do you remember?
I do remember. We had Marin Alsop. We had Nimi Järvi. We had Larry Ratcliffe. We had Maximiano Valdez. We had Timothy Russell and Miguel Hart Bedoya. Yeah.
And how does that feel to come back now and be on the other side with this orchestra?
Well, it's always, for me, it's always a great opportunity to be able to come back here at Interlaken, because so much of who I am today was defined by my experience at Interlaken, both as part of the summer program and as part of the academy. And I always look forward with great anticipation to be able to return to this beautiful campus and to work with the students here. Honestly, I always really look forward to it, and it's fun. It reminds me so much of perhaps what was going on through my head doing Brahms's Fourth Symphony with Marin Alsop. I was thinking this morning during the rehearsal, trying to remember if perhaps did she have the same challenges we are facing this week in putting the Second Symphony together, I was trying to remember how. It's such a wonderful feeling to be able to take a composer like Brahms and have them meet a young person for the first time. It's an opportunity one gets only once in their life, I think, to meet Brahms for the first time. And it's something that I will remember forever, and I hope the students will as well. But Brahms, it's a very interesting composer, because so much of what we think of Brahms has to do with this heavy, dark, deep sound. But at the same time, as I was telling the students this morning, most of Brahms's music I find very light and quite rhythmical, actually. And the inner pulse of everything in Brahms's music that stems from the Vienna of the late 19th century, where he was living, it's so influenced by the dance rhythms that were around him. And I feel like a great Brahms is always comes with a great rhythmical structure. And, not the same rhythmical structure that Stravinsky would have, but it's still a very strong pulse, I guess I should call it, that needs to be very evident in Brahms. And then the question then becomes interesting in Brahms: when is it missing and why? And when is it strong but on the wrong beat? so that's where Brahms lives for me. And he has this this clarity, but at the same time presented in a way that creates an ambiguity with it that becomes... becomes fascinating. And I think this is where people then, audience members and the musicians that have not performed Brahms yet, like young musicians, then approach Brahms from the idea that it needs to be unclear, or it needs to be thick and round, because that's the impression that you get from listening to it. Mm-hmm. But actually, it's quite the contrary when you perform it.
Well, he even wrote a joking note to his publisher about it when he wrote it, saying, "Oh, this is so depressing. You're hardly going to be able to stand it." And yet it's quite the opposite.
Exactly. It's quite the opposite. But everything in Brahms's music, even the happiest of music, it's a happiness that I've always thought of Brahms as a composer that was never young. Because his happiness stems from a melancholy of time that has passed. And he always looks back as an old man, being happy about a thought that never materialized. Does that make sense?
It absolutely and does.
So his happiness is not the same as Dvorak's. But there's still happiness, and it's a introverted happiness, which is at the hardest thing for a young musician is at this age to be able to relate to that, because at the age of 15, 16, 18, really the only happiness I think one has experienced has to do with an immediate real happiness rather than a memory of what happiness used to be. That comes later on in life. So that will be the I would say, character challenge this week in trying to portray Brahms's music in the right way. He never was able to define, I think, for himself, even in his own personal life, he loved what other people loved rather than making a statement that I love what I love. You know what I mean? He was always in a way, in love with the wrong thing or at the wrong time. There's so much in this music to me that speaks of this ambiguity and this search, in a way, for reality. He is a fascinating composer this way, because you can't say that Brahms didn't make statements. That's not what I'm getting at. But the statements were not in a direct and an honest way, the way that Dvorak does, which is the big difference to me between Dvorak and Brahms. Dvorak has an innocence and an elegance to his statement that Brahms never really is able to portray. You know, Brahms has a directness to his statements, but they're still far off, either behind or in the distance, where with Dvorak they are real, they're in front of you. Dvorak's happiness is more relatable. And one thing that I often encourage musicians is to allow Dvorak to be weird, actually, and the way that he makes those gestures, because they are very uniquely his. But Dvorak needs to be real, because the way that his gestures are so direct and jagged, in a way. They are not smooth. Brahms is all about hiding behind a statement. Well, Dvorak is about speaking his mind before he has thought what that statement is. This is, to me, if I can simplify the two, this is the way that the two are very different. So I often tell orchestras that I'm going to make a t-shirt that says, keep Dvorak weird, because you need to keep Dvorak weird in order for it to really speak.
Christian Macellaru, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us.
My pleasure.